How was the Ekadasi fast? So today and tomorrow are the last 2 days. So we still have, let me see, we still have 16 chapters. Anyway, so we selected 3 chapters out of the remaining 16. So yesterday we covered up to 13th. Now we'll jump to 20th chapter of 11th canto. And that is actually 13th chapter of Uddhava Gita. If you are referring to the book, it will be 13th chapter. If you are referring to 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it will be the 20th chapter. So this chapter is describing pure devotional service. Describing the pure devotional service surpasses knowledge and detachment, which we already discussed a few times, that how pure devotional service is actually beyond knowledge and detachment. So this describes how pure devotional service surpasses knowledge and detachment. So it begins with a question from Uddhav. So question is asking, Uddhav is actually asking that Vedic literatures giving injunctions about positive activities and negative activities. The positive activities are called piety, and negative activities are called sin. The piety and sins are constant reference of Vedic analysis of the components of a given situation, namely the material ingredients, place, age and time. The Vedas reveal the existence of material heaven and hell, which are the destinations of piety and sin. Pious activities lead to heaven and sinful activities lead to hell. And without such authorized Vedic literature, which ultimately award liberation, he is asking, how can anyone, he is actually commenting, Uddhava is saying, how can anyone ever achieve perfection of life without without such authorized Vedic literatures, which ultimately awards liberation. I'm just giving you the summary of Uddhava's questions. And then finally he's asking, my dear Lord, the destination observed between piety and sin comes from your own Vedic knowledge and does not arise by itself. The consideration of piety and sin does not arise by itself, but it arises in reference to Krishna and Vedic knowledge. If the same Vedic literature subsequently nullifies such distinction between piety and sin, there will certainly be confusion. Anyway, basically, Uddhava is asking Krishna that you gave the Vedic literatures, and the Vedic literatures is very clearly making a discrimination between pious activities and sinful activities, or proper activities and improper activities. That way Vedic literatures are directing us what to do and what not to do. And it's also giving us the direction that if you act in a right way, there will be heavenly achievements in heavenly planets. And if you act in a wrongly, there will be punishment in the hellish planet. So he is actually asking Krishna to clarify that, how this consideration is going to lead one to the ultimate point of perfection. Because sometimes people may think that pious activities that have been described in the Vedic literature are the ultimate goal of life. It happens. And those who follow the Karmakanda section of Vedas, they think to achieve the heavenly planet is the ultimate goal of life. Scriptures like Ramayana, the descriptions there, in a way may make one think that these sages in the forest who are performing such severe austerities and penances, their goal of life is actually to be elevated to the heavenly planets. And their description, the chariot came from the heavenly planet to take them. But you have to understand that these are the Karmakanda considerations. But even in the same Ramayana, we also find the admission that these endeavors are not the ultimate goal. Because one sage who was performing great austerities, I forgot his name, then the chariot came to take him to heavenly planets. So he asked, "Tell me, what is there in heavenly planets?" So he described, this is available, that is available, all kinds of wonderful arrangements of enjoyment. But then he asked, "And for how long I'll have this?" And he said, "As long as you have your piety in your stock. Because when your piety will be exhausted, then you have to come back again." Then he said, "Then if I have to come back here again, then what's the use of going there?" So tell me something that will be permanently achieved. Some achievement that will be permanent. And then he spoke about the spiritual sky. He said, "Then let me try to go there. You know, why should I go to heavenly planet just for some superior enjoyment? After all these enjoyments are ultimately culminating to nothing. Rather, when I become attached to those enjoyments and then I lose it, then it will be very, very unfortunate. So better let me remain in this situation, aspire for something that will give me a permanent benefit." So in this way, in the scriptures, the clear indications have been given. But a layman just reading those books may not understand that. And that's why time and time again Prabhupada pointed out, to study, to understand the Vedic literatures, you need a spiritual master. A person who has that perfect knowledge. And we are fortunate that we found a spiritual master like Srila Prabhupada, who gave us the perfect knowledge. Otherwise, we'd be misled. We could have been misled. And we were misled actually. We had all kinds of misconceptions, but by Prabhupada's mercy, all those misconceptions today has been dispelled. So now Krishna is answering. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Uddhav, because I desire that human beings may achieve perfection, I have presented three paths of advancement. In order for living entities, especially human beings, to achieve perfection, Krishna has given three specific paths. And then they are the path of knowledge, the path of work, and the path of devotion. That is karma, jnana and bhakti." So this way Krishna time and time again is making clear to us that how devotional service is the ultimate achievement. Does anybody have any doubt about that? I know, I am confident in that. None of you have any doubt about that. Now what is the ultimate goal? Is devotional service. Although according to one's state of consciousness or according to one's situation, one may initially desire to enjoy. But the thing is, one should enjoy in a specific way. Like nowadays, how people are trying to enjoy. They're trying to enjoy recklessly. What is their enjoyment? Their enjoyment is reckless indulgence in eating, sleeping, mating, not even eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Their reckless enjoyment is in meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex and gambling. When they want to enjoy, today when people want to enjoy, old and young alike, is just indulgence in meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex and gambling. And such huge arrangements, such systematic and elaborate arrangement has been made for that. Especially in the Western world. For gambling, they have cities built just solely for gambling. The huge racket for intoxication, massive arrangements for supply of meat. They're cultivating meat in one end of the world to supply to the other end of the world. In one corner of the world is New Zealand, and they are cultivating this cow in developing industry. Cow, I was about to say cow production. Cow slaughtering. That's one of the biggest industries. Argentina is another place. The cities has been based on, they grew on this meat industry. in, especially in America, the early days, like it's all Kali's arrangement. The cities developed based on meat industry, meat, cow slaughter. And that is, so this is what is going on in this world. But that is not, and what is going to happen, that is sinful activity. These are all sinful activities. And these sinful activities will create a very, very miserable condition. They will suffer. They can't imagine how they are going to suffer because of this sinful activity. Therefore, the Vedas are telling us these activities are sinful, these activities are pious. These activities are inappropriate, these activities are appropriate. So act in this way, don't act in that way. And people believe that. I don't want to go to hell, I don't want to suffer, so I shouldn't do these things. Prabhupada mentioned that even recently, in the recent past, people in India were so conscious about that. Like in 1942, the British created an artificial famine to force the Indians to join the army, the Indian youth to join the army. Because when there is famine, when there is no food, in utter desperation, you know, they'll try to find some way. And then they make the offer. Come, join the army, you'll get food, you'll get salary, and so forth. And they burned the miles after miles of paddy fields to create that artificial famine. And Prabhupada mentioned that although people died out of starvation, but there was not a single instance of looting or stealing or plundering. No one stole. No one. They rather died of starvation. Why? Because they knew that if they did that, then the consequence will cause them to suffer in the next life. So implicit was their faith. But in today's world, people don't care. They don't even care for that. They don't even believe that there is a next life. This atheistic culture has influenced them so badly that they don't have this very simple consideration which was the prevailing factor in the Indian culture. You know, consideration of reincarnation, consideration of rebirth. This is not everything. So why should we act in this life in such a way that in next life I have to suffer? So let me be careful now not to act in an inappropriate way. So the point is, those who want to enjoy, they're given the direction. Okay, fine, if you want to enjoy, go ahead, enjoy. Karmakanda section of the Vedas. After 20-30 years of intense enjoyment, they realized, well, for so many years I've been trying to enjoy, but still I'm not happy. Still I'm not satisfied. I've simply been running after a mirage. So when they came to that point, then the consideration was, okay, you have seen the real nature of this material world. So now you try to get out of here. So in order to get out, you have to know the way. How to. So this how to this knowledge aspect was going to take them through different phases. What is this material nature? Why I am suffering? Why I am suffering? I want to enjoy, but I'm ending up suffering. Why is that? So then he gets to know about the real nature of this material existence. They get to know about the karmic principle. And they also get to know that these karmic principles are going to bind him. Either good action, bad action will bind. Therefore, the desire for liberation. And then at the ultimate point of that knowledge, they come to realize that surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate goal of life. I want to become liberated, but what is the appropriate way of becoming liberated? And there are two ways that we can become liberated. There are two ways that I can get out of my suffering condition. There also there is a consideration of the right way and the wrong way. Like a prisoner in the prison. The prisoner can actually go out of the prison house in two different ways. One is by digging a tunnel out of the prison. Some people, there's lots of stories, you know, from escaping from prisons. They're all trying to escape by digging a tunnel out of the prison. But getting out of the prison in that way will solve the problem? No, it will rather intensify the problem, increase the problem. Because you may get out of the prison, but you won't be able to live peacefully. You'll be in constant anxiety because of police will be after you. You won't be able to live in out in normal world. You have to hide in the forest. And then when you are caught, these police are very expert. They are going to catch you sooner or later. There is Krishna's police force especially empowered. You may hoodwink the state police, but you can't hoodwink the Krishna's police. So they are going to catch you sooner or later. So, and when you are caught, what will happen? Will be awarded or you'll be punished? Now the punishment will become more serious. Now you'll be put into the prison from where you cannot escape. Because this prison you escape, now you'll be put into a more secured prison. And so this is one way one can get out of the prison. And there is another way of getting out of the prison. That one recognizes what is his crime for which he is being sentenced in the prison, for which he is being punished in the prison. What's the crime? What is the cause of his imprisonment? And then what will the prisoner find out? What is the cause of a prisoner's imprisonment? He is disregarding the law of the king. When someone ends up in the prison, when he breaks the law, he realizes the reason for his imprisonment, and he recognizes that he broke the law of the king, and that's why he is in the prison. So he appeals to the king and begs forgiveness. He surrenders to the king and says, please forgive me and I'll never ever come into such a mistake. And then what happens? then the king releases him from the prison. Out of these two, which one is better option? Okay, so the impersonalist, that means those who do not accept the authority of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they opt for this other way of getting out of the prison house. And the ones, those who surrender to the king, surrender to the King of Kings, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they are the devotees. So this is how gradually we are coming from the state of enjoyment to the platform of liberation, and beyond liberation is surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Or the perfect liberation is surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If somehow or other, by good fortune, one develops faith in hearing and chanting of my glories, such a person, being neither very disgusted with nor attached to material life, should achieve perfection through the path of loving devotion to me. Then neither disgusted nor attached to their prison condition. They don't want to. They realize that, okay, I'm in the prison house. I'm in the prison. So they are not too attached to enjoy the prison, nor they want to run away from the prison. Their thing is, I'm here, I don't like this situation, this is not desirable, so let me see what I should do. And incidentally, one comes to that situation only when he comes across a bona fide teacher. Because it's the teacher who actually reminds him that. Look, this is actually prison house. You are trying to enjoy, but actually there is no enjoyment. You are suffering because you are in the prison. Can you expect enjoyment in a prison? No. So try to get out of the prison. How to get out of the prison? The cause of your imprisonment is that you disregarded the King of Kings, Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as a result of that, you are suffering here. So just surrender unto him. Another analogy in this respect from the Vedic scriptures is, you are running after a mirage in the middle of a desert. You are thirsty, you want water, but you are running after a mirage which is not water. Mirage will never provide you water to quench your thirst. And somebody comes and gives us that knowledge. This is a mirage. So don't run after the mirage, just go for the real water. And when you listen to his instructions and follow his direction, then yes, we find the real water. And not only that, he gives us a bottle of water to drink. So I know you didn't get it. You are thirsty, so drink this water. And we say, yes, my thirst is quenched. So this is how we develop our faith in him. That he must know where the water is, because he's already giving me water. Although in the middle of the desert. So that is how our faith becomes fixed in him. And he must have he must know where the reservoir of water is, because he is carrying the water himself. And that personality is a bona fide spiritual master. That's why often I ask to verify that point. Ever since you joined ISKCON, did your quality of life improve or not? Ever since you joined ISKCON, did your heart become content or not? So that's the proof. That's what Prabhupada gave us. That's the proof. He not only gave us the information about the spiritual sky, he gave us the spiritual Mahaprasad. By drinking that or eating that, we have become satisfied. Here I don't mean just Mahaprasad, I mean his mercy, in the form of his mercy. He gave us his mercy, and that mercy worked. Due to his mercy, our heart became content. As long as one is not satisfied by fruitive activity and has not awakened his taste for devotional service by Shravanam and Kirtanam, one has to act according to the regulative principles of the Vedic injunctions. So here the regulative principles of the Vedic injunctions are known as Shastra Vidhi. And the following those instructions are called Vaidhi Bhakti. It's not that as soon as we come to Krishna consciousness, we immediately achieve perfection. You get admitted to a school, but does it mean that immediately you mastered all the subjects? What happens? You gradually go from step by step. Primary school to secondary school to high school, college, university. It takes time. Therefore, we should not be impatient. Why is it taking so long? Rather consider how you are progressing. Sometimes devotees ask, how can I make out whether I am progressing or not? It's difficult to make out because you won't be able to make out. So leave it up to Krishna to begin with. Let Krishna decide. You try your best. And then again, there are two other considerations. One consideration is, how can we judge whether we are making progress or not? It will be seen by how humble you have become, how tolerant you have become, how content you have become in your heart. This is one consideration. And the other consideration is that in spiritual life, the more you progress, you feel that you are regressing. It works in a reverse order. Meaning, the more you progress, more you become aware how far to go. The more you progress, you feel that you have further away to go. Further to go. Unlike material progress. Say from Indore to Delhi you are going, you can see you are coming closer and closer and closer to Delhi. But about progressing towards a spiritual direction, It is like the more you progress, more you become aware how impossible it is to achieve. Another way to look at it is that when you became, most rarely that happens with most of us, that when we join the movement, we think that I am the pure devotee and everyone else is nothing. He simply, this is a sign of a neophyte devotee. He recognizes Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he serves him with great devotion. But he doesn't recognize Krishna's devotees. Meaning, he thinks he is the only devotee and no one else is a devotee. I am the best devotee. Or I am the only devotee. Everyone else is a fake. But then in the second class platform, one recognizes Krishna and feels love for him. He recognizes Krishna's devotees. He feels friendship towards them. He recognizes the innocent and he preaches to them, distributes his mercy to them. And he recognizes the offenders and avoids them. That is the second class platform. Love for Krishna, friendship to his devotees, compassion to the innocent and disregard for the offenders. And what is the Uttamadhikar platform? He sees that everybody has become a devotee of Krishna, only he himself couldn't become a devotee. See the difference? In the Kanishtha Adhika platform, at a neophyte stage, he thought he was the only devotee and no one else is a devotee. But in the Uttamadhika platform, he is seeing that everyone else has become a devotee, only he himself couldn't become a devotee. So that is how the spiritual life works. Okay, is it just, or rather let's consider, why is it like that? Why is it like that? It's because we are infinitesimal, we are minute, and Krishna is the absolute. So the more the minute comes closer to the absolute, how will he feel? He'll become more and more aware of his minuteness. So that is what happens when one makes advancement. The more he comes closer to Krishna, the more he becomes aware of his insignificant position. My dear Uddhava, a person who is situated in his prescribed duty, properly worshipping by Vedic scriptures, but not desiring the fruitive results of such worship, will not go to the heavenly planets. Similarly, by not performing forbidden activities, he will not go to hell. Because he doesn't desire either of them. He is not interested in fruitive activities or fruitive results, and nor he is indulging into forbidden activities. He will not either go to heaven or to hell. That's the situation of a devotee. Does a devotee want heavenly planet, desire for heavenly planet? No. At the same time, does a devotee indulge in forbidden activities? No. Therefore, a devotee will neither go to heaven nor to hell. The results of both heaven and hell desire human birth. On the other hand, the residents of heaven and hell desire birth in the earthly planet as a human being. Why? Because human life facilitates the achievement of transcendental knowledge and love of Godhead. So again, you see the rarity of this opportunity. It's not available in hell or even heaven. This opportunity is available only in the earthly planet, in the human form. So that's why even the demigods desire the good fortune of having the human body in the earthly planet. They pray to Krishna, "My Lord, if we have some good fortune left, some piety left, then please enable me, please allow me to take birth in the earth planet as a human being." So this is the good fortune we have achieved. Like even the demigods in heaven are praying to Krishna to be situated in our situation. So even the demigods are praying for this situation. So why should a devotee desire to go to heaven? The residents of heaven are praying to Krishna to be in his situation. A human being who is wise, therefore, a human being who is wise should never desire promotion to heavenly planet or residence in hell. Indeed, a human being should also never desire permanent residence on earth. Another very important consideration here. Don't desire permanent situation in the earth planet. What's the use? Here we are getting an opportunity. This is not the place, but this is a situation that can enable us to get the ultimate perfection of our existence. Therefore, let's take advantage of that. Like a railway station. When you go to a railway station, do you want to stay in the station all the time? Or you go to the railway station to catch a train? Or an airport? You go there to catch a flight. Similarly, this earth planet is like a railway station or an airport. And the human form is an opportunity to get a ticket and a passport and a visa to go to the heavenly and go to the spiritual sky. We are in a situation because we got the human body, we can apply for a passport, or you can get a passport, get the visa, buy the ticket, and go to our destination. And what's the destination? The destination is back to Godhead, Golok Vrindavan. So that is what Krishna is pointing out here. Now we should not, we don't want to go to heaven, we don't want to go to hell. Rather, the residents of heaven and hell are desiring to be here in the situation where I am in. But that doesn't mean that I should stay in this situation forever. This situation is enabling us to take the opportunity to go back to the spiritual sky. Another way to look at it is, each universe has 14 planetary systems. Out of them, 7 are higher and 7 are lower. 7 higher planetary systems are known as heavenly planets. Rather, 6 higher planetary systems are known as heavenly planets. And the lower planets are known as the hellish planets. Now, you consider a building. 7 planetary systems are like a building, a 14-story building. Out of this 14-story building, 7 stories are above and 7 stories are below. 7 stories are basement and 7 stories are above ground. Now, when you want to get out of that building, what is the natural way out of the building? Which floor? Ground floor. So Earth planet is the ground floor. 6 are upper, 7 are lower. Similarly, if you want to get out of this universe, the way out is this Earth planet. And not only the ground floor, in the ground floor you have to come to the lounge and the door. And that lounge is actually the Earth planet. I mean the land of India, Bharatvarsha. And this Bharatvarsha is not a situation, it's a state of consciousness. The land where people cultivate spiritual life. But now you see, today by the arrangement of Kali, Bharatvarsha is not Bharatvarsha anymore. Whereas, by Prabhupada's mercy, this culture of Bharatvarsha, Krishna consciousness, Vedic culture, has spread all over the world. So whoever takes to this process becomes qualified to get out of the material nature. That's the point Krishna is making here. The residents of both heaven and hell desires human birth on earth because human life facilitates the achievement of transcendental knowledge and love of Godhead. Whereas neither heavenly nor hellish bodies efficiently provide such opportunity. These opportunities to develop love of Godhead is not available in anywhere else, either higher planetary systems or lower planetary systems. Then Krishna gives a very nice example. Just as a bird had a nest in a tree, so when the tree is cut off, then what does the bird do? Does the bird continue to dwell in that, or does the bird fly out of there and makes his residence somewhere else. Similarly, a wise man, knowing well that one's duration of life is being similarly cut down by the passing of days and nights, one should be shaken by fear. In this way, giving up all material attachment and desire, one understands the Supreme Lord and achieves perfect peace. Knowing that the tree that we are living in is being cut, and at any moment it will fall. So let's be prepared to leave this tree and go where we will have a peaceful situation. And what is that peaceful situation? The peaceful situation is the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now Krishna is saying that, well, mind, it has been instructed that with your mind you always think of Krishna. But still, if the mind deviates, mind flickers, mind wavers, mind is not able to concentrate, doesn't matter. Whenever you see that the mind is drifting away, get it back. So this is how we have to practice. Krishna is telling, with your mind you always think of me, but the mind loses its focus, loses concentration. So what should we do? Whenever we notice that the mind is drifting, just bring it back. So that is the practice, to focus on Krishna's lotus feet. And even when one is absorbed in mental activities, one should never lose sight of the goal of that mental activities. What's the goal of the mental activity? Krishna's lotus feet. In this respect, Krishna is actually prescribing one method, which is the method of yoga. Pranayama, which is a part of yoga, that mind is... mind's activities are very closely connected to a breathing process. Don't we notice that when we're excited, how do we breathe? When you're excited, our breathing becomes very rapid. And when you're peaceful, our breathing is rather slow. So that way you can see the link between breathing and the activities of the mind. Therefore, this process of pranayama, is by controlling the breathing, they control the mind. The purpose of pranayama is simply to control the mind. In this respect, we must remember that the purpose of or goal of pranayama is not to have some physical benefit, body's benefit. Like pranayama for good health. No. Pranayama is meant for fixing the mind on Krishna's lotus feet. So he is prescribing the process of pranayama. Yesterday also Krishna instructed on that, how pranayama would help us to concentrate. Until one's mind is fixed on spiritual satisfaction, one should analytically study the temporary nature of all material objects. So that means Krishna, before indulging in material activities, Krishna is suggesting that you think about it deeply. Analyze, consider what is the consequence. And then he is giving the example of an expert horseman, how to control the mind. An expert horseman, what does he do when he breaks the horse? You see, the horses are generally untamed. Horses are wild, naturally. When the horse is caught, it is wild. And horse is very powerful. So how does an expert horseman train the horse? Do you know how he does that? He lets the horse have his way for the time being. But then he pulls the reins. And then when the horse gets wild, he lets him go for a while. And then he pulls the reins. So in this way he trains the horse. Similarly, a devotee should learn to control his mind in this way. If the mind is going, let it go for a while. But then, pull it. How to do that? Let the mind realize the futility of this material nature. Why I'm doing this? Why I'm running after this? A person is attracted to a beautiful object. But then, okay, fine. Dwell in that object. But now, pull the rein. Have you ever thought what's going to be the ultimate consequence of that? So much hassle. You are attracted by the beauty of a woman. You want to enjoy with her. Okay, good. But now you think, what do you have to arrange for that? You're a brahmachari. You don't have any income. You don't have any house. So if you want to change your ashram, now you have to get a house. You have to have a steady income. So have you thought of it? Are you ready for that? Then the mind thinks, my God, like, I don't have proper qualification to get a job. I can't get money. All I can do is maybe a dishwasher in a restaurant. And then also how much I'll earn. And will she be satisfied with this meager earning? And then what will happen? Now it's only her, but after some time it will be another one. So, with the time, the responsibility and the demand will keep on increasing, and on and on and on. So is it really worth its while? Worth its while? Now you apply the intelligence. What the intelligence say? Better not. Or somebody may say that, well, he is not just a brahmachari without any resources. He is an IIT graduate. He can get a job. Or he has his inheritance from his father. But still, if we think deeply, we will see that how troublesome it is. I'm sure all the householders will agree with me in that point. That's why when a brahmachari wants to change his ashram and ask my advice, I tell him, go and speak to 3 householders and then you make your decision. Take the advice from 3 householders. Anyway, I mean, but then again, then the girls may think, then what about us? In that respect, Prabhupada said that there is one problem that I haven't been able to solve. I have one problem that I haven't been able to solve. And then Prabhupada said, I want all my brahmacharis to remain brahmacharis, and I want all the girls to get married. So maybe the best way out is that all the single girls should find a boy outside and make him a devotee. So Krishna is saying, until one's mind is fixed in spiritual satisfaction, one should analytically study the temporary nature of all material objects, whether cosmic, earthly, or atomic. One should constantly observe the process of creation through the natural progressive function and the process of annihilation through the regressive function. Then Krishna is giving a very nice assurance. If because of momentary inattention a yogi accidentally commits an abominable activity, then by the very practice of yoga he should burn to ashes the sinful reaction without at any time employing any other procedure. The point is, if there is some problem, if there is some accidental fall down for a devotee, to rectify that situation, he should simply stick to devotional service, because the devotional service will purify. And he should not think that by some other means he should try to rectify that situation. Having awakened faith in narrations of my glories, being disgusted with all material activities, knowing that all sense gratification leads to misery, but still being unable to renounce all sense enjoyment, my devotee should remain happy and worship me with great faith and conviction. Even if a devotee understands the futility of materialistic endeavor to enjoy, but still, if he is unable to renounce all sense enjoyment, a devotee should remain happy and worship me with great faith and conviction. Because if he continues his devotional activities, devotional service, eventually he will become free from all material entanglements or all material allurements for sense gratification and become fixed in his spiritual consciousness. But this process must be practiced through hearing and chanting. It is through hearing and chanting that one will achieve the ultimate perfection. Although he may not be perfect now, although he may have different allurements, although he may become subjected to those allurements, doesn't matter. Carry on with full faith. So in this way, Krishna is actually giving us the assurance that just practice the process, it will work. You'll achieve the ultimate perfection. Go through your life. Even if you make mistakes, don't worry. Even if you are not capable of rendering pure devotional service, free from, devoid of desire for sense gratification, doesn't matter. And then came Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he made it even more simple. He said, just bring Krishna in and purify the entire situation. Krishna here is talking about his mind, how through the mental activity to achieve spiritual perfection. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and gave us a process how through our, even if our physical activities, we can achieve our spiritual perfection. Fine, whatever you are doing, just do it, but do it for Krishna. So that is why Mahaprabhu is even more merciful than Krishna. Krishna is not giving that that process here. This process is still very difficult. Although Krishna is being very, very merciful. Okay, I mean, he is talking about a yogi who is practicing Ashtanga Yoga system to free his mind from material entanglements and become achieve perfection in Krishna consciousness. All these processes are through the mind that he is speaking of. But it is taken for granted that the body has already been, body's consideration has already been taken care of. It is the mind. There is no room here. Krishna is not giving us the process of how by physical action we can achieve perfection. He is talking only about the mental action. Free your mind from all these attachments. And yes, Krishna consciousness. Like this process is something like the consciousness is flowing in this way. Krishna is giving us the process that how to withdraw the consciousness and project it in that way, or you can say this way, in towards the heart. Because her heart is the passage towards the spiritual goal or spiritual sky. Or for some yogis it can also be the head. But Krishna here is talking about the heart. He is talking about love, not just knowledge. Love. Do we love with our head or do we love with our heart? Do we ever say, I love you with all my head? I love you with all my heart. Because the love is a matter of this region. So Krishna is actually talking about withdrawing our involvement in the material nature and develop our love for Krishna. But what did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu give? So this is, let us consider, like that's one direction and that's another direction. If it's opposite, then we have to consider this way. This is the, if this is the material direction, where is the spiritual direction? That way. So this is actually a process of transforming our consciousness from there to there. Krishna consciousness, no doubt. But the process is from there to there. Consciousness is withdrawn from here and projected there. But the what process Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave? What is the uniqueness of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's presentation? Do whatever you are doing here, but do it for Krishna. You are eating? Okay. Eat for Krishna. You are acting? Okay. Act for Krishna. You want to make a lot of money? You want to make a lot of money? Okay, go ahead and make it. But give a good part of it for Krishna's service. So do whatever you are doing it, whatever you are doing, but do it for Krishna. You have a family, you have a home, fine, stay at home. You don't have to leave. But in this process, you have to leave home. If you want to practice this process, at the beginning, what was told? That you go to a solitary place, which is not too high, not too low. So did he say that you go with your family there? You have to go there alone, away from everything. A solitary place, away from everything. Not just a solitary room in your house. Or not a solitary yoga studio in your city. Krishna is talking about going away. That means you left home. But what is Mahaprabhu saying? Okay, fine. You have a house, stay at home. You have family, stay with them. You have a job, work in that job. Now what to do? Not changing, simply have to change the consciousness. Okay, you have a house, but just make a nice altar, not in just one small corner of your house, but use the best room for that. The best facility, you make a nice arrangement and install, have the deity of Gaur-Nitai. I was about to say Radha Krishna, but then I remembered that Radha Krishna worship is actually very demanding. But worshipping Gaur-Nitai is very easy because they don't take any offense. Install a nice deity of Gaur-Nitai. So now to whom does your house belong to? Krishna's house, right? It's not your house, or you still, it's still your house. Now, consider that this house belongs to Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Gaur-Nitai. Okay, now to maintain Gaur-Nitai's house, you need money. You are working to earn the money. For what? To maintain the house of Gaur-Nitai. Okay, you have your family members, so you have to maintain them. But who are these family members? Their servants and maid servants of Gaur-Nitai, Krishna. So to maintain them, you need the money. And so it's not to maintain your family, but now you are earning the money to maintain Krishna's family. So when we develop this attitude, then we can remain engaged in whatever we are doing, but now look at the consciousness. So it's actually a transformation of consciousness. Transformation of consciousness. We don't have to transform the situation. We simply have to transform the consciousness, and by doing that, our situation will improve. Now, this is how you see, in the situation that we are in, remaining in that situation, our consciousness is automatically being transformed. So another way we can look at it, you see, what is Maya and what is Krishna consciousness? Maya means to look away from Krishna, isn't it? When you look away from Krishna, we see Maya. We are in Maya. Now Krishna has been compared to the sun. So let's look at this analogy with the sun. You turned your face away from the sun. Then as a result of that, what are you seeing? You are seeing your own shadow. Which has been caused by the sun itself, but which is absence of the sun. And you are thinking, whatever the shadow is doing, you are thinking that is you. And that is the meaning of false ego. The shadow that has been cast due to your looking away from the sun is the false ego, which is identifying yourself with the shadow, not your substance, not with the soul. And whatever the shadow is doing, you think you are doing that. Now, due to the absence of the sun is casting the shadow. So now you consider the two ways. Either you turn your face, that is one way. That is the way, that is the process of meditation and so forth. Turn your consciousness. Look towards Krishna. But that process is very, very difficult. The other way is that you're looking at the shadow, you're identifying yourself with the shadow and so forth. Now bring the sun in there. Will the shadow be there? And Krishna being omnipresent can appear in the shadow also. And when Krishna appears in the shadow, will the shadow be there? No. So Sankirtan is something like that. Just bring Krishna in the center of all your activities. And as a result of that, you will achieve your spiritual perfection. Krishna consciousness. And then Krishna is saying, because my devotees possess saintly behavior and deep intelligence, they completely dedicate themselves to me and do not desire anything besides me. So bringing Krishna into the shadow means that. That bringing Krishna into the life, and everything is for the sake of Krishna. They do not desire anything besides me. Indeed, even I offer them liberation from birth and death, they do not accept it. Even if Krishna offers liberation, they don't want to take it. Why? Because they are not interested in liberation. They are interested in devotional service. What if liberation doesn't award that service? Then it will be so unfortunate, so undesirable. Material piety and sin. So Uddhava's question was about the link, relationship between piety and sin in the context of spiritual advancement. So Krishna is coming to a conclusion. Material piety and sin, which arise from good and evil of this world, cannot exist within my unalloyed devotees, who being free from material hankering, maintain steady spiritual consciousness in all circumstances. Indeed, such devotees have achieved me, the Supreme Lord, who am beyond anything that can be conceived by material intelligence. He is beyond our mind, beyond our intelligence. Therefore, he is known as Adhokshaja, transcendental, beyond. Adhokshaja, beyond sense perception. Persons who seriously follow these methods of achieving me, which I have personally taught, attain freedom from illusion, and upon reaching my personal abode, they perfectly understand the absolute truth. Srila Prabhupada ki Gaur Premanande. Does anybody have any question? Okay, let Ramananda do the take. We are just closer here, and then give the mic to Lila Madhavi. Yeah, good point. Yeah, the devotional service is available in other planets also. But that is not pure devotional service. That's mixed devotional service. Like the demigods are devotees, but they are fruitive devotees, karma mishra bhaktas. Even in higher planetary systems, they are devotees, the jnana mishra bhaktas. Right? But the pure devotees, pure devotional service is available only on the earth planet. And as I mentioned, to go out, to get out of the material nature, one has to go through the earth planet. So when an acharya like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur comments like that, then we have to understand that he is indicating that there is a need to go there and make them aware of the pure devotional service. So that, you see, pure devotional service will be achieved only by a pure devotee. Only when a pure devotee speaks about pure devotional service, we get to know the importance of pure devotional service. Even in moon planet, although they are very exalted personalities, and demigods with inconceivable power and potency, but they also need to know about pure devotional service. And once they become inspired, then probably they will want to come to the earth planet. Okay, give it to Prana Nath Prabhu. Yeah, since otherwise, you know, the mic has to come back and forth. Prana Nath.
Prana Kishore.
Oh, I'm sorry, Prana Kishore. Okay.
I wonder if you are organizing a devotional service, rendering pure loving devotional service. So I always wonder what is the relation between love and service?
Good. What is the relation between love and service? Right? Very good. When you love somebody, what do you want to do for them, that person? When you love somebody.
I want to serve them.
Right. So that is the link.
In the spiritual world, is there some personality who, because everyone serves Krishna, but is there some personality who loves Krishna? They don't raise service, they love him. Is it possible?
You see, love is expressed through service. When you love somebody, you want to do something, don't you? Right. And what do you want to do for that person? What he wants, what he likes, for his pleasure. Right? So that service, that action, due to love, is called devotional service.
In my heart, sometimes I hear you saying, eternal serving movements.
Yeah. Because that loving service is so joyful that once you get the taste of it, you don't want to lose it. Therefore it's eternal, forever.
I want just to know,
you see, people in this age are not qualified to do pranayama. They're not qualified. Because you see what pranayama ultimately means? You know, like we discussed yesterday about the process. Inhaling, retaining, exhaling. Right? And the process is actually, as you progress, your retaining power increases. Right? So much so that you stop breathing. Pranayama is not just, one in and two out. Right? That's like, it is no out. Right? You just kumbhak. You just retain your life here, within. And when you are able to do that, then your mind is not functioning in the material direction. It's now fixed, peaceful. So that's why, we don't really encourage pranayama. We don't encourage, but if somebody is too attached to it, what to say? I saw some reaction just now. Yes. Three modes? What's that? What's your question? What's your question? The point is, these material contamination doesn't affect the soul, but it affects the consciousness which is flowed from the soul flowing through the body. You get it? It affects the consciousness. Soul is not being affected. Right? But the consciousness is coming. See, I gave the example yesterday. Say the soul is here. The consciousness is flowing. Through what? Through the subtle body, mind, then to the gross body. Right? Now, who is being affected by the modes of material nature? Soul or the body? That is the point. The soul in itself is not affected, but because the consciousness is flowing in that way, the soul is identifying itself with the body. That's the meaning of the false ego. Anyway, get involved in devotional service. Don't worry about all this. Soul is getting affected. No, give it to her.
Some devotees underwent very strict
Again, simplify the question for me. So what is Krishna's real concern, the material body or the spirit soul? Okay. Then let's first hear what's your understanding. Krishna speaks of protection. What protection he is talking about? The protection of the body or the protection of the soul? So Krishna's concern is actually the soul. Now, if by going through some experience the soul becomes more Krishna conscious, will Krishna allow that? So when a devotee goes through some hardship or difficulties, we have to understand that it is Krishna's arrangement to become Krishna conscious. So that is how mercifully Krishna actually helps his devotee to become fixed up at his lotus feet. So the main thing is, as Krishna said, like even if there is some fall down, but one should continue with devotional service because that's the only way to purify life. The main point is, no matter whatever happens, remain in Krishna consciousness. Just remain in Krishna consciousness. Even if there is some difficulty, even if there is some problems, by remaining in Krishna consciousness, we are actually securing our position, and eventually we'll be able to receive the ultimate mercy of Krishna. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada so emphatically told us, no matter whatever happens, don't leave ISKCON. No matter whatever happens, don't leave ISKCON. And you know, in what occasion I heard that from Srila Prabhupada? One very advanced devotee, he was a sannyasi, he was a GBC at that time. He used to lead fantastic kirtan, like very, very dynamic leader. But he got married and he left the movement. So then some devotees brought him to Srila Prabhupada in Vrindavan. And then Prabhupada asked him, Prabhupada told him, you got married, so what? And then Prabhupada pointed out some householders sitting there in the room. Prabhupada said, he's married, didn't have to leave his car. So he got married, so what? And then Prabhupada said, no matter whatever happens, don't leave ISKCON. Don't ever leave ISKCON. And that devotee is so nice. He took a humble position from being such a big leader to a rather insignificant householder in the movement. It was difficult, you know, for such a person to accept such a humble position. But he did that, and he is still in ISKCON. And he took Srila Prabhupada's instruction, and he is happily situated. So no matter whatever happens, don't ever leave ISKCON. Maya will try to take you away from ISKCON. Maya will come in so many ways. But just stay at the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada in ISKCON. Okay, we have a few questions from the internet. There's a question from Guru Gauranga. Wow. Yeah, for Guru Gauranga it's early morning. Oh no, I'm sorry, he's in South Africa. I was thinking that he was in America. Hari Bol, Guru Gauranga. Dear Guru Maharaj, Dandavat Pranam. How does a Vaishnava continuously practice and realize humility to overcome the influences of the three kleshas and three gunas? Since the mind is by nature chanchal, how to secure steady realization of humility? Yes, the influences of three types of misery, that is, misery is caused by the body and mind. Misery is caused by other living entities. And misery is caused by natural calamities, material calamities, caused by nature. So these three things are very disturbing. And there are three modes of material nature which binds us. So Guru Maharaj's question is, how does a Vaishnava continuously practice and realize humility to overcome these influences? Very good point. In one hand, these influences are there which are very, very difficult to overcome. But at the same time, as you mentioned, Guru Gauranga, how does one cultivate humility, continuously practice and realize humility to overcome? So cultivate humility means you assume a humble position. Meaning, don't you think that you will be able to overcome these things? Right? You will be able to overcome the influence of the three modes. You'll be able to overcome the three types of miseries of the material nature. So, the way to do it is, as he says, humility is the way. That is, become humble and accept whatever is coming as Krishna's mercy. And tolerate it. Therefore, humility must accompany with tolerance. Therefore, Mahaprabhu said, Trinadupi Sunichena. So you may become humble, but in order to withstand this onslaught, you have to be tolerant. And how to become tolerant? By being Krishna conscious. Krishna is inflicting this to me, so let me accept it with folded hands. Why should I try to counteract them? So let me accept them with the proper consciousness. Krishna conscious. Krishna, you are so merciful. If I am in a difficult situation, it's Krishna's mercy. Krishna is teaching me a lesson. And also at the same time, it is due to my past karma that I must have done something wrong, and as a result of that, I am getting this punishment. But because I have surrendered to Krishna, Krishna made it easy for me. It could have been much worse. I should have got 10 lashes, but I got only one. Because Krishna very mercifully reduced the punishment. So now that I got this one lash, let me understand. Let me realize. I must have done something wrong, so let me not do anything wrong anymore. And let me just depend upon Krishna. All the bad things that are happening are due to my bad karma, and all the good things that are happening to me are due to Krishna's mercy. This is how a devotee looks at it, as you said, with humility. On the other hand, how does a materialistic person look at it? When good things happen to him, he wants to take all the credit for that. And when the bad things happen to him, he blames Krishna. Smita Krishna Das from South Africa. In an earlier chapter, chapter 16, Krishna says that the self-realized sages praise those in the mode of goodness, are indifferent to those who are in the mode of passion, and reject those in the mode of ignorance. How does this relate to Lord Chaitanya's mission and mood? Because we see that he actually reached out to the fallen who are actually in the mode of passion and ignorance. Yeah, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not reject anybody. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted everyone. And by his mercy, he is purifying them. And that's why he gave the holy name. Just by the potency of the holy name, everyone will be delivered. Even those in the ignorance, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not reject them. Even those who are in so much ignorance that they can't even speak, Mahaprabhu bestowed his mercy. At least they could hear. And by hearing the chanting of the holy name, they got purified. This is how wonderful the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is. So, Haridas Thakur actually, Mahaprabhu asked Haridas Thakur. In this way, they were having a conversation. That what will happen to those who cannot, and Haridas Thakur pointed out, just by hearing they will get delivered. Then Mahaprabhu said, what about the trees and plants? And Haridas Thakur said, when the holy name is chanted and it echoed, it's not an echo actually, it is their chanting. So this is how the holy name is going to deliver everyone. Next, Haribol. Yeah, that means even if they have some difficulty by the being allured by the material influence, but they won't completely fall in Maya. They may fall in Maya for the time being, but then they'll come back to Krishna consciousness again. And by coming back to Krishna consciousness, they'll get purified. Let some other devotees ask. They are mixed devotion, yeah.
So why is not a purpose to come pure devotion? Like, why is it
Pure devotional service can be executed everywhere, but the availability is not there. Like say for example in Patala Loka, in Sutala Loka, Boli Maharaj is there. He's a pure devotee. Right? In the higher planet, Brahma is there. He's a pure devotee. Right? Lord Shiva is there. Swayambhu, Narada, Sambhu. Narada Muni is traveling everywhere distributing pure devotees, pure devotion. They're there, but generally it is not available. Some individuals are there, yeah. Okay. Yes. Well, there are some very nice devotees who are deaf and dumb. But through sign language there, you see, their ear may not be able to hear, but their intelligence is hearing. Right? Hare Krishna, yes? You can give it to me. I didn't hear you. See, he is actually talking about it is due to the mode of goodness's influence in Mahatattva that mind was generated. So generally mind is in the mode of goodness, but the mind gets affected by passion and ignorance. It's susceptible to in losing its own natural characteristic. Because ultimately it is the mind, right? And it is through the mind that the consciousness is flowing. So pure consciousness is coming and affecting in the mind, and then the material influences are affecting them. That is how the mind is getting contaminated. And it is through the mind only we can conceive the spiritual reality. Therefore Krishna is emphatically saying, with the mind you think of me. He is not saying that with intelligence you analyze me. With your intelligence you can analyze, but thinking will happen through the mind. And thinking means flow of consciousness. The preacher should know how to present it according to his audience, according to the person he is speaking to. Like for example, when you preach to the Christians, we don't straight away go to follow the four regulative principles, chant 16 times, right? On the other hand, rather, we try to make them understand that what we are presenting is same as what Jesus Christ also presented, right? There may be some differences, but we don't magnify the differences. Rather, we look at the similarities. Similarly, when we preach to a Muslim, we have to present it accordingly. And then, as they begin to accept it, then we can, reveal more and more. The other day I was in Dubai and there was some meeting with some people from the royal family, and we had a wonderful discussion. I was simply speaking about the similarity in our thinking, in our ways. And that way, you see, they become receptive. Like another time I was traveling flying from Dubai to Mumbai, and next to me was sitting the head of the Emirates operation in this part of the world, Southeast Asia. His head office is in Bombay. And we were sitting next to each other. He was dressed in European clothes and things. He looks, at first I thought him to be an European. And we started, and then he told me who he was. And and we had such a wonderful discussion that for rest of the flight, which is about 3 hours, we are constantly talking. But all 3 hours we were just talking. And at the end of the, and finally at one point he admitted, he said that not that too often he had this, no, he said never ever in the past he had the chance to speak to any Hindu, spiritual personality. And he was telling that this gave him such a clear understanding of what Hinduism is. So, and a preacher must know how to present it, like how he is going to be receptive. What if we start speaking in such a way that he doesn't even want to look at us? So, and accordingly, like similarly, when you preach to the youth, we have to preach in a certain way. When you are preaching to the grown-ups, we may have to preach in some other way. Yes, that way. Yes, our presentation has to be accordingly. So next I'll go to, this is the last question I'll take today. This is from Srimati Radhika Devi Dasi, Hyderabad. Guru Maharaj, please accept my most humble obeisances at your lotus feet. Guru Maharaj, what is the destination of a person who has taken the process of devotional service which is given by Mahaprabhu but does not have full belief that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself? Okay, let him keep practicing and let him associate with the devotees. Then eventually he'll recognize that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At least he has accepted him. That's why he's practicing the process. He may not fully accept, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself, but that he is rendering service, that will purify him and qualify him to become a pure devotee. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.